I'm in Houston in Texas, and if you're in any doubt we're in the USA, just turn on the car radio and tune up and down the dial. It's almost wall-to-wall country music. In the sky. As you approach Houston, you'll see how the "everything is bigger in Texas" cliche originated. Just outside the city, the I-10 expands to 26 lanes. That makes it the widest motorway in the world. The landscape around the city is flat, dry, and dusty, and that makes Houston stand out on the horizon. Its skyscrapers shoot up, making it look like a futuristic city, the sort you'd see in a sci-fi movie. The sight made me both curious and a bit excited, because I knew so little about the place.
Houston is an unknown commodity to most Americans. They come here, they know it for The Eagle Has Landed, they know it for NASA, and they think they know it from cowboy movies, but they really don't know hardly anything about the city.
It's surprising to learn that this metropolis is now America's fourth largest city, and soon will be third biggest.
Houston's a huge city, probably 2+ million just in the city proper, 6 million, I think, regionally.
Houston is so spread out, locals refer to the city's massive ring roads when they work out where an area is.
To live inside Loop 610 is the most advantageous area of town to live in. This one is 35 miles around the city. Beltway 8 is 85 miles around the city, and we're building a third one.
Houston does have a downtown area, but its suburban shopping malls also act as focal points or mini centers in many different parts of this sprawling city. The Galleria offers an alternative city center with 350 stores and some high-end retailers like Versace and Cartier. There's even an ice rink. The River Oak Shopping Center was built in the 30s. It sat along a palm tree-lined road and retains the look of that era with its sleek white stucco-finished buildings filled with boutique shops. It's unique, and it was my favorite. The River Oaks area itself is quite moneyed with grand mansions set behind expansive gardens.
If you were to say to me, "Richard, I want to live on the street that would show that I was one of the 25 richest people in Houston," it would be this street right here. It's called River Oaks Boulevard.
It looks presidential, doesn't it?
Yes. These are the titans of industry. These are the men that own the football teams and you know, CEOs, stuff like that.
Now, it's hard to navigate, drive, and sightsee at the same time, so I recommend booking a 3-hour trip with Richard Cook of Texana Tours. Houston's not the sort of place you can see on foot, and few people use public transport.
These are bus stops, and we've passed about 6 of them. You see anybody at the bus stop? That's because in Texas, we get a driver's license when we're 15. You can drive for the rest of your life in Texas. When you get so old that you can't see the eye chart, you can mail in the renewal, because it's an inalienable right of every Texan to have a driver's license.
You don't see people crossing the road in the older downtown area. In fact, the streets are eerily empty even during the day. Richard explained the 6 miles of tunnels which you access using stairs or lifts. In them, you'll find shops and restaurants 20 feet below the street. They were built to keep the shoppers out of the scorching Texan sunshine. A local finance company actually forbid its workers from crossing the road at street level during the working day after a member of staff was killed in a collision with a car. As a visitor, you're most likely to visit downtown for performance or public arts.
We're one of 5 cities in the United States that has all 5 of the performing arts with a resident company. In other words, we have Houston Ballet, we have Houston Grand Opera, we have Houston Symphony, we have an equity theater called the Alley Theater, and we have an off-Broadway venue.
They've spent a bit of money on interesting art here. I like the way that the downtown road bridges crossing the interstate are floodlit in different colors at night. And there's permanent installations too, at the side of the Buffalo Bayou River, which slowly runs through the town. There's 7 statues depicting people kneeling. They represent the 7 continents and are made of interlocking aluminium letters.
We call this tolerance. They're assembled by letters of alphabets, So like the English alphabet and the Arab alphabet and the Chinese alphabet, each one of them is made with the characters of a foreign language. We're all saying the same thing.
Further down the river in downtown, there's interactive art. You're encouraged to press a large button on the Preston Street River Bridge.
Over there is a compressor. It releases a huge amount of air right in the middle of the bayou when I press it, and it comes up.
A large bubble of air and water bursts to the surface. It's artist Ian Ruck's solution for preventing the water in the river becoming stagnant and smelly. Then, 15 minutes drive away near the Galleria shopping centre, Richard took me to see more wet art.
Well, this might sound like I'm standing at a waterfall, but in fact, I'm in the residential and business section of Houston next to a water feature where water cascades down a semicircular concrete wall.
Water runs down this concrete crescent, creating a cooling fountain 20 metres high. It sits in the park surrounded by tall oak trees. It's not there for the sake of art, though.
In an air conditioning system for this huge building that's right here, a 55-story building, basically the water is absorbing the heat of the building and making the air in the building cool.
We drove for 10 minutes back towards the city centre and reached the edge of Houston's Museum District. The attractions set within the green parkland spaces include the Fine Arts, Children's and Natural Science Museums. We headed to the edge of the upmarket leafy Montrose suburb to visit a world-famous gallery where religion, art and architecture intermingle. Mark Rothko was considered one of America's most influential abstract artists. Last year, 110,000 people came here to view Mark Rothko's work.
The Rothko Chapel's in a lot of top 10 places to visit, and people are coming specifically to come to the chapel.
It is a peaceful place of reflection. I asked Executive Director David Leslie why it's termed a chapel.
It really was designed to be a very ecumenical, welcoming place for people of faith, people of no faith, but a place where spirit was front and center. So in that sense, I think chapel works pretty well. Outside in front of the chapel, there's a reflecting pool. In the pool is Barnett Newman's iconic broken obelisk.
That sculpture is made from 3 tons of steel. It looks like a sharpened pencil with its point resting on the peak of a pyramid. It was offered to the city in 1969 as a memorial to the civil rights activist Martin Luther King. He'd been assassinated 1 year previously, but the council didn't want to put a tribute to King outside City Hall, so instead it was placed outside the Rothko Chapel. Houston's home to some interesting street art too. On Malone Street in the suburb of Rice Military, you can see a house entirely covered with 50,000 crushed beer cans. Street art's also drawing graffiti fans to Houston. There's displays all over the city. One of the most impressive spots is in Charteris Street, an area of industrial buildings just off the Route 69 freeway.
It's kind of like a cascade of vertical colors. People, every day, you just see them taking pictures, you know?
Houston's home to the prestigious Rice University. That's near the Rothko Chapel. And visitors are welcome to visit their Moody Center for the Arts. Inside this 50,000 square foot gallery space, you can put on goggles and immerse yourself in a 3D virtual reality art display. It's a collaboration with Google. They loaded up a pre-prepared display. I looked down at my feet and thought I was standing on the top of a cliff.
So you're experiencing something that your mind doesn't understand is not real. It sees this, it's real enough in your head that it's totally the edge of a cliff. You're going to fall off this cliff.
I then used a control pad to draw a snowman. It appeared three-dimensional. I reached out trying to grab it as if it was there. Houston visitors are welcome to go and have a go.
If there's a line, a lot of people, we're giving people, you know, 15, 20 minutes to kind of play with it.
Next door, you can ditch the goggles and enter a darkened room. Inside, your hand or foot movements can direct where colourful flowers slowly grow and bloom on the walls or floor.
It's not a video, it's generated on the fly. There's different flowers that form and die, and on the floor it detects where you're standing, so if you stand in a spot, flowers start to grow around you and more and more and more will grow around you. And on the walls, if you wipe on it, about 10-15 seconds later, the petals will start to flutter away.
Next, we'll visit the most Texan of events, the rodeo, and the place that made Houston the most famous city on the planet, NASA's Space Center. I hope we don't have a problem. This is the Great Destinations Radio Show. I'm in the southwest of the USA, in the Texas city of Houston.
You need to see cowboys, oil wells, and spacemen. And we've got all three.
It's not really a touristy place. It's a massive metropolis with all the shopping, culture, and arts events and activities you'd expect to find in a modern and affluent city.
It's fun. I mean, you're on holiday. You want to go places where it's engaging, where you can learn, where you can kind of get out of your skin for a little bit.
Well, I drove out to the Energy Park, an area of offices and event arenas on the city's outskirts. Each year, it's where the Houston Livestock Show and Rodeo takes place. Outside the arena, there's attractions and retailers just like you'd find at a UK county show. But when I went inside, I was immediately struck by the size and scale of the event. It was founded as a small cattle show back in 1932 to promote the beef industry. But now it's the biggest livestock show on the planet.
This is the world's largest. This year we have 28,000 entries.
I spoke with the show's Alison Tolka, and she told me that the agricultural aspects do remain important and very popular. As I walked around the animal enclosures, I noticed some owners shaving and brushing the fur on longhorn cattle. It's almost a beauty pageant.
We're going to let these longhorns loose with 4 to 5 foot horn span. And they'll actually be running around in the arena, and that provides really for a great atmosphere, kind of taking you back to the Old West and how that was done.
Nightly entertainment from huge stars also draws in the crowds for the event, which runs just under 3 weeks each March. The evening rodeo starts at 6:45, then a big-name performer's on stage 2 hours later. Alicia Keys, ZZ Top and Willie Nelson were some of the 2017 headliners. There were a host of country stars too, well known here, but less famous in Britain.
In 1942, they put the first entertainer on the stage, that was Gene Autry. And so they realized they were onto something at that point.
I found the trade stalls fascinating. It was a different world. There were so many cowboy hat and boot vendors. Rick Themister's company, Head and Tail Hats, has been trading for 37 years. I noticed he was holding hats over a machine which burst a jet of steam.
It makes the hat soft so you can bend the hat without breaking the material. And then once it cools and dries off, it gets stiff and hard again.
So how do you find a cowboy hat that's right for you?
To turn me loose on let me shape one, I'll fix them up with their size of their head and their face. And
what should I be?
I would do the brick on you.
A brick?
Yeah.
I met two-time world champion roper Chad Masters. He's clearly a name and was giving non-stop TV and newspaper interviews.
Texas Longhorn would be a cow that's got some horns. I rope the horns. In the team roping, there's three legal head catches. Would be the horns around the neck, and then one horn and his nose would be a half head. And then the cow would be coming out of a roping chute, headed straight. I'll turn him to the left, and I got a partner that ropes his back legs. So if he catches 2 feet, it would be a clean run. If he gets a leg, it'd be plus 5 seconds.
How will he be judged tonight then? How will he be scored when you're on? Is it the speed in which you get the rope on?
Exactly. It's on time.
And if you don't understand that, I suppose you could just wait for somebody to fall off.
And the one thing that I think excites the fans is maybe not so much the talent, but almost how many wrecks there is.
Rodeo is a big money sport.
You could win $50,000 or more. It could set you up for the rest of the year to rodeo.
Well, just after 6 o'clock, I entered the massive arena, which was quickly filling up with hot dog and nacho-clutching fans. You could feel the crowd's excitement, and the hosts were working the audience well. I had wrongly assumed that rodeo would just be guys with ropes on horseback and cattle in the big hall. This show was slick, stage-managed, and the video playback on the monitors above our heads had all the production values of TV's X Factor.
Now that's what we've been looking for.
Boy, that was great.
Well, next, my Houston trip took me to the NASA Visitor Center. It's a 30-minute drive southeast from the city centre, although I suspect it's quicker in the Rockies. There's interactive displays and a chance to look inside spacecraft that have returned to Earth.
This is our kids' space place, so it has really fun interactives that are best for children and really made for them with them in mind. And it demonstrates tons of things like gravity and what it's like to be on different planets and what you would experience there.
You can, for instance, launch your own bottle rocket. I was much more interested in the actual space artifacts, including rocks retrieved during missions. You can touch samples from the moon.
And there's only 8 in the entire world, only 8 moon rocks that are on public display that people are able to touch, and one of them is at Space Center Houston.
And that just feels like polished marble, doesn't it?
Yes, yeah. We've had 18 million visitors at Space Center Houston since 1992, and probably the majority of them have touched this moon rock. So Houston, every once in a while, we have hurricanes, and when that happens, all of the moon rocks have to be evacuated and taken to a safe and sterile location at Johnson Space Center. And when they do that, if there are any little bits that fall off, they sweep them into those little trays to ensure that not even the dust is lost from these moon rocks.
Or you can grab a piece of Mars.
It's a very special opportunity to get to touch a piece of Mars or to see these meteorites. There are not very many that are in public collections.
Feels like slate.
Absolutely.
The center also hosts the actual Apollo 17 command module from the last mission that went to the moon.
And you can see, if you look closely, the scorch marks from re-entry where it burned up as it came back through the atmosphere.
You'll also see the largest collection of spacesuits on display anywhere, and there's one from the Apollo moon landing.
You can actually see moon dust on it still. It still has a gray sort of tone, and that's the actual moon dust.
There's so much information here and so many things you could ask about the science or technology, but it seems most visitors want to know about the toilets.
Visitors almost always ask about the restroom. My favorite question is how they sleep. It's like a sleeping bag that's attached to a wall vertically, and you sleep with your head strapped in, sort of standing, you know, but you're floating in zero gravity. So that's a really fun thing, and they actually demonstrate that. They let visitors go up and actually get in the sleeping bag and feel what it's like to be in that space.
Now, that's not a very big space. That's probably only about, I don't know, 25 feet, if that, across. So is that representative of the space they'd be operating in?
This would just be one module. The actual space station is about the size of a football field.
As I peered into the spacecraft, I was surprised at how cramped the living areas were.
This is the actual Gemini 5 capsule. So this is what went into space, the actual capsule, and it's so small. Like floating through space in a garbage can. That was how the astronauts said they felt, because it was so small and metal and compact, and it was definitely an interesting experience.
That's not much bigger than a telephone box, is it?
No, it's very, very small. Everything had to be measured just so the math was exact. They have to account for every tiny bit of weight.
We went outside to Independence Plaza, where you can visit a Boeing 747 bought by NASA as a shuttle-carrying aircraft. The seats and passenger facilities were stripped out and the aircraft modified for its role. It was reinforced so it could take the weight of the space shuttle piggyback riding on the plane. And there was a chance to peek inside a replica space shuttle. I'm grateful to Cameron Scott for showing me around. As you might imagine, the Space Center's really busy, and you're best to set aside at least half a day to take in this fascinating collection of space artifacts, exhibits, and interactive experiences. I decided not to eat in their zero-gravity cafe, and instead headed back to Houston to sample the city's renowned restaurants. Mark Holly opened Holly's in Houston's Midtown just under 3 years ago. He serves up seafood with a twist, and that might surprise you if you think Texas is all about steaks.
But here in Houston, we're right on the coast of the Gulf, and so that's definitely where you will find us in our off time, you know, always out trying to track down the soft-shell crabs and, you know, some of the most difficult stuff to really get your hands on, too.
Mark's from Ohio and has traveled to Houston after spending time in New Orleans. His family's from Kentucky and Georgia, so many regional tastes have influenced his cooking. His peanut soup starter was delicious.
It's a big staple item of the South. There are certain parts of Alabama you can go, and on the roadside they're selling boiled peanuts, which is a different preparation. But we wanted to actually take that soup and kind of roast it down, cook it with tomatoes, a little hot sauce, a little Worcestershire sauce, just to give it some character, some depth, and some body. And right at the end we had a little shrimp, but we also add a little of that Texas honey in it to kind of sweeten it up because of the tones of the heat that we put in it.
He also served up blackened snapper and incredible shrimp. I'd recommend Holly's. If you want to splurge, then Steak 48 is Houston's swankiest restaurant in the affluent River Oaks District, a stylish space offering best quality steaks, including the sought-after Wagyu fillets. There's also delicious seafood there, including lobster and crab cakes, beautifully presented by highly attentive staff. It's where the city's movers and shakers make big decisions over mouth-watering meals. If you're searching for high-quality cuisine, you will find it in Houston. It's got that big city feel and offers everything you'd find in New York or Los Angeles, which did surprise me because we tend to hear so little about Houston. The big difference between the city and perhaps a European capital is that you're going to need a car to truly experience the place. But unlike many large conurbations, you won't find Houston's locals to be distant or aloof.
There is a bit of Texas hospitality and Houston hospitality where, in a way, everybody you meet here is a concierge. They're going to go over backwards to make sure that you get to where you want to go.
Visit Houston kindly accommodated me on this trip. For more information about things to do and places to go, check out their website at visithouston.com.
The Great Destinations Radio Show.